Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Rudin Report Live. I'm Dave Rudin. It seems if we have one pattern going on in FCAC football, it's we have a big week and off week, a big week and off week. And this was an off week where everything played to form. Didn't have a lot of competitive games, not a lot of attractive matchups as we head into the bye week. We're going to be joined in a little bit by St. Joseph football coach Joe Delavecchia. And as always, my co-host is joining me, Sean Ireland. Sean, how you doing?
Hey, Dave. How are you? I'm doing great.
I'm doing okay here. I got to tell you, though, I was at New Canaan yesterday. I got to admit, the most exciting game of the weekend for me, as was for a lot of people, was Vanderbilt's win over Alabama. I got to give a little bit of a quick shout-out. I don't know if you got to see any of the game because I only saw the highlights.
Oh, no, I saw the entire fourth quarter because I saw the bottom line. I'm like, wait, Vanderbilt's beating Alabama in the fourth quarter, so I found the game and put it on, and it was crazy. It was crazy.
And the only reason it's a big deal for me, until I started this live show, I have a good friend from New Canaan whose son is on the Vanderbilt football team. So, in fact, I forgot to put my Vandy hat on today. But, I said, well, maybe they'll be competitive because they're coming off the Georgia win. And then I'm watching the score, and I see they're staying in the game for so long. And I'm watching the New Canaan game and sort of between plays popping up and seeing what's happening. And my friends texting me, and I just got a kick out of that. So if you're listening down in Nashville, David Siegel, congratulations on a memory of a lifetime. And Sean, this is kind of like 2 weeks ago where there weren't a lot of appealing matchups. There was one intriguing game which we're going to spend our time with in a second, but any thoughts on what was basically by form week of football?
I think Ludlow is not down. I think, you know, based on what I saw, you know, I know the final score, it wasn't a one score game or anything like that. But they seem to be like they were very competitive, so good for them.
Yep, that's a game I want to talk about. That was the most intriguing matchup. It's been a pattern with Fairfield Ludlow that they've probably been the top of the second tier team since Mitch Ross came over 8 years ago. He's done a great job with the program. He had his second 7-3 season last year, but they haven't been able to play with the elite teams, and they had a chance again last night against New Canaan. They played last year when the Falcons came in 3-0, and I was at what was basically a monsoon, and New Canaan was up 43-0 right before halftime, and they stopped the game at that point, and it was raining so hard. Ludlow came in again 3-0 last night, and they certainly held themselves well, and they were very respectable in a 30-14 loss to the Rams. And you know, they've never qualified for the postseason before, but they definitely have a path to being possibly 8-2 this year and finally getting into the playoffs.
Yeah, and that's credit to Mitch and his guys, you know, because before he got there, you know, they were a lower tier two, high tier three team. Now, every time you can't look at Ludlow and be like, hey, that is a win. You know, a couple things bounces here and there last night. You know, maybe it's a different story. But, you know, Mitch is doing a great job there.
Yeah, three turnovers hurt them. And if you really want to look at the stat that I think is most telling, Ludlow quarterback Grant Stupak had a really good game. But he completed 24 passes for 214 yards. And Luke Robinson and the Rams had a good bounce back from their 14-0 loss last week to Massac. Luke completed 14 of 21 passes, so he had 10 fewer completions than Grant for 198 yards. So just 16 fewer yards in 10 fewer completions and half the attempts at Ludlow just really, They held the ball for a longer period of time, but New Canaan forced them to make long drives. And Ludlow was able to do it twice, but they weren't able to do it enough. And I thought that was the big difference in the game.
Yeah, the other thing too, Dave, like, you know, Ludlow, you know, it was a competitive game, of course. But New Canaan scoring right at the end of the first half, I believe they scored maybe 20 seconds left. That's a punch in the gut, you know. So if you take that one play away, you know, that one score away, who knows what happens? It could be a completely different game.
Mitch hates to punt. Mitch is sort of old school and goes by those analytics that it's usually, no matter where you are on the field, it's usually to your advantage to go for it on fourth down. Yesterday, and this was a first guess when he was doing it, because they're at midfield. It was fourth down. They're still in the game at that point. It was 17-7. And I think I would have punted the ball and held and tried to go in at halftime down 10, but I think he figured they're at midfield and they were going to need some more points. He went for it. They got stopped, and New Canaan had the short field with just over 2 minutes to go. And then Robinson hit Charlie Koch with 16 seconds, and now it's 24-7 instead of 17-7. And I thought that was the critical turning point in the game. Ludlow did score early in the third quarter, but it made it a 10-point game, and that was it. I think if they had gone in by 10 points at halftime, maybe they stay in the game at least longer if they don't win the game.
Yeah, that's one thing when, and Dave, you said it early, when you play Mitch, you got to defend all four downs. He's not punting, and it's a high risk, high reward. But when you're on the other side of the ball, it's very stressful. You know, it's like, oh, come on, Mitch, just kick the dang ball, will you? You know, but no, he keeps his team out there, and you know what? It's his strategy. It's been working for them, so credit to them.
We'll come back and talk about Ludlow football and the Rams in a little bit, but we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to segue into St. Joseph football. The 4-0 Cadets are off to a great start, and Coach Joe Delavecchi is going to join us. You're listening to the Rudin Report live on WICC. Okay, we're back here on the Rudin Report live, and we're going to go over to St. Joseph football. The Cadets are 4-0, coming off a win yesterday over Stanford. And joining us right now is their Cadets coach, Joe Delavecchia. Joe, how you doing?
I'm good, Dave. How you doing?
Okay, I guess whenever you're sitting there 4-0 and you're in the state top 10 poll, not a place where you're usually accustomed to being, but I'm sure you're real happy with the team's start so far.
Yeah, 4-0 is a good thing. So we're happy with that. But, you know, we got a lot of work to do. Got a real tough schedule ahead of us for the rest of the year. So we're happy where we're at now, and hopefully we could keep improving.
Tell me, let's talk a little bit about the game, and I was following it mostly on Twitter. You played a Stanford team that's got a lot of speed, is an underrated team, but has really been beat up, losing their quarterback, E.J. Presley, and Cam Cord, their top running back, to season-ending injuries. But you're looking at the end of the third quarter, and you're holding on to a 17-13 lead. What's the mood at that point?
Well, it was much better than when we were down 13-0 and only ran 10 plays at that point in the game. You know, they came out and took it to us in the first half. You know, we had to make a couple of adjustments at halftime. And, you know, we had a spark from TJ Wright, ran back to second half kickoff for a touchdown. And, you know, I think after that we settled in defensively, had to make a few changes what we were doing. So, you know, we were feeling pretty good about things. You know, we were starting to shut them down a little bit, and we were starting to move the ball, and actually having the ball was a big thing. We like I said, we only had 10 plays in the first half, so we certainly didn't come ready to play, and they came ready to play.
I didn't get to see too much about it, but was Stanford just sustaining long drives early on?
They had the ball. We had four plays in the first quarter. They had the ball the rest of the first quarter. Their opening drive was about 9 minutes. And then their second touchdown drive was like 90 yards.
Wow.
We just couldn't get off the field. They took it to us.
You mentioned TJ.
That was a wake-up call.
TJ Wright returning the second half kickoff for a touchdown. I think he was, and a lot of people just know him for being a great basketball player, but I always think of him, and defensive backs don't get a lot of attention. Everybody's kind of looking at what the wide receivers are doing. But I always thought he was one of the most underrated players in the league because he was such a good shutdown defensive back, and you could put him on the other team's best receiver, and that player wasn't going to really hurt you too badly. But he's just really become a dynamic two-way player. I know he played some wide receiver last year, but he just seems to be coming into his own as a receiver, and then you have him as returning kickoffs. He's just become a real all-around playmaker for you.
Yeah, he's dynamic with the ball, for sure. So, he almost returned the first kickoff back after they scored the first touchdown. He returned it, across midfield. He just missed breaking that one, too. So he's good with the ball. He's certainly given us a big lift, and he's been a starter for 3 years, and certainly he's been one of our better players. And this year he's really standing out.
And then in the fourth quarter, it became Hogs football, and you got a couple of running touchdowns from Finn Kilmartin and Tristan Spain. And then I saw Jason Pagano, who's another one of the top defensive backs in the league. He had a long pick six. So I guess you come away going into the bye week, maybe not happy about the first three quarters, but certainly about the way you played the final quarter.
Yeah, I think in the second half, we came out with a different attitude. It's hard dealing with 16, 17-year-old, telling them there's no light switch, you got to be ready every day. And we didn't have a terribly great week of practice, and certainly showed. But we were resilient. We kept fighting back, and we got a much-needed bye week to get some rest, hopefully get some guys healthy. We had a few players go down against Stanford, and we had a couple going into the game that obviously weren't playing. So hopefully we can get some people back.
Sean, I'll defer to you on this one because I know I've covered Joe, so there's no question about his status amongst football coaches, not just in the league in the state, but I do know from talking to other coaches that they always, when they talk about the best coaches in the league, Joe's always come up with everybody. You had to go against him, so I'll let you talk a little bit about that and ask Joe whatever you'd like.
Yeah, Joe's up there with all of them, okay? I know a lot of people they talk about, rightfully so, Lou and Mars and those guys, but Joe should be mentioned with those guys all the time. Joe, quick, did you see any panic in the kids this week? Or was it just like, all right, enough, let's turn the switch on?
No, I appreciate your comments about me, by the way, but I have a great staff around me that works hard and helps out with a lot of things. But, as far as the panic, no. It was the first time we were down all year, too, including scrimmages. So that was something we hadn't really talked about, and we didn't even mention it, to be honest with you, at halftime. But we just went in and did a couple of those things differently on defense. We were in the wrong defense in the first half to stop what they were trying to do, so we had to make some adjustments, and being down players, it was harder to do it on the field while the game was going on because we had inexperienced guys out there. So, halftime, we just talked about what we're going to do on defense, changing and offensively. We had a plan, and like I said, we only ran 10 plays in the first half, so we kind of stuck with some things that we wanted to do and did some things more that we didn't anticipate doing. So our kids didn't panic. A lot of credit to them because we have great senior leadership this year, and we're playing about eight seniors starting. I think we have seven sophomores starting for us, so it's a good mix in there, and with leadership and youth and the energy. But you know, bottom line, got to be ready all week.
Are you surprised by how well the team's been? I know I saw you very early. I think it was opening day of high school sports. I was covering the your girls' soccer team. And you took the field for practice after they were done, and I went over to talk to you. And number one, you were really hyping up the sophomore class that you just referred to and how talented they are. But how they're obviously, when you have sophomores, you don't know how they're going to do. And you weren't really sure in terms of just the big picture with the team. So are you surprised by how successful you've been so far?
Not really. I mean, I think we could be better, to be honest with you. I think we could have done some things better as we go along. We're growing. I knew we would compete. That was the big thing. We have, like I said, the senior class, when they were freshmen, they were a terrific freshman team. Kind of reminds me of the sophomore class. They lost about 10 kids from that class a few years back. Otherwise, we would have been a loaded senior class. And the group that's still here stuck together. We had a big injury to Connor Fahey 2 years in a row. And this year, you know, he was going to be our back. And, he was a dynamic player himself. And we lost him before the season started. And I think they kind of rallied around that. And our sophomores, you know, they're just ultra competitive kids. I mean, I haven't seen a class like this since our 2019 kids when they were sophomores. These kids get after and they enjoy the game and enjoy playing every day. So I had a feeling we would compete. Being 4-0, you know, is a lot of extra icing on the cake there, because, you know, I wasn't sure where that we would be at that with the schedule that we had.
Yeah, I know you referred to losing some players, and you kind of had to rebuild the program a little bit. But you can kind of see that everything's on the upswing again, and the influx of talent that we're used to seeing with the cadets is back there. Before we take a break, I want to, if you don't mind, would you stay on for start us next segment? Because we do have 3 weeks from tonight, the Rudin Report, third annual awards night, and one of your players, who you just referred to, Connor Fahey, is going to be honored, and I want to talk a little bit about him. So if you don't mind, can you stick around for a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, we're talking to St. Joseph coach Joe Delavecchia, and we'll be back with him shortly as we take a break. You're listening to the Rudin Report live on WICC. We're back here on the Rudin Report live. I'm Dave Rudin. Sean and I are talking to St. Joseph coach Joe Delavecchia. 3 weeks from tonight is the third annual Rudin Report Sports Awards Night. It's going to be a special event at the guest house at Sacred Heart University. We're going to have a good time honoring New Canaan girls lacrosse coach Kristen Woods, Staples baseball coach Jack McFarland, and Fairfield Ward girls basketball coach Dave Danko. We also have a Charlie Capalbo Inspiration Award that we're giving to Brian McMahon's Zoe Ingber, and we usually honor just one player for their inspiration. I started the award named after Charlie Capalbo, who inspired not just this area, but really the whole country, as his five-year battle with cancer was very public. A former goalie for the Fairfield hockey team, it got all the way to the NHL, and everybody knew Charlie and how much he inspired others until he tragically passed away. And I wanted to perpetuate his name and his legacy and honor students at the same time. And after I heard about what happened to Connor Fahey, the St. Joseph football player who 2 years ago, I remember, or last year, I remember talking to him in the preseason. He was going to take over at quarterback. And then a couple of days later, suffered a season-ending injury. This year, he was going to come back and play in, I know, in the secondary and maybe get some time in the backfield as well. And you can't really make up this bad luck. But a year to the day after his surgery, a second season-ending injury. And I know everybody talked about how inspirational he was last year being with the team. And so decided Connor's going to be our second Charlie Capalbo Award winner this year. And again, the Rudin Report Awards night is 3 weeks from tonight. And Joe, I want you, I can talk a little bit, but you can talk about him firsthand, just about Connor Fahey and what he's gone through and what he's meant to the program, even though he hasn't stepped on the field.
Well, certainly our football community appreciates you recognizing Connor, a well-deserved award for Connor. I'm sure it's not an award that he inspired to go out and get to start his career, but he has been nothing but an inspiration for our kids. That senior class that I spoke of, they're very tight. You know, they grew up together, and they're very close throughout their 4 years. Last year he tore his hamstring pretty much off his bone. It was a terrible injury, season ending, and it was tough, but he worked the day he was able to walk. He started working to get back to be ready. He was stronger this year. He did not take a day off, no matter how much pain he was in. And, he was excited for the year. He was one of our captains. He started for us as a sophomore and had a terrific sophomore season for us. And then coming into this year, he was going to be one of the guys. And just to have the injury again, he broke his leg. And when he was on the ground, I just remember walking out there and he said, "I just want to play football. I just want to play football." And, it's heartbreaking because he lost his high school career right there in a blink of an eye. But our kids rallied around him and, they've been thinking of him, do it for number two. And he's been at every practice since he's been, out of surgery. He's helping HT out. He's helping the defensive backs. He's talking to everybody all the time. And he's trying to contribute as much as he can, to be part of the team. And he's a big part of it.
Yeah, I know he's done a lot with HT Jones, who took over as quarterback last year as a freshman in his place and is really developing. If you don't follow high school sports closely, it may sound strange to say somebody inspires and still contributes without stepping on the field, but if you're around high school sports as much and the bonds that teams develop, it's easy for us to see how somebody can be an inspiration like that. Just for anybody who's saying, why are you honoring somebody who doesn't play? How can a kid who isn't on the field, how can they still be an important member of the team? Just talk about what Connor's done. Like you said, going to every practice, he doesn't have to be there, but he is. And just what he means to the team and to the other players.
Well, I would say, every program in high school football across the state, they preach family and you could see by their following and the brotherhood that the connection that high school football gives you like no other sport and no other 4 years in your life will ever give you. Connor, having him around, just being there is an inspiration to see here's a kid who lost everything and he could have just said, I'll just sit in school and go home and mope about it. And he didn't. And I tell our kids, you have to understand how fortunate you are because you don't know what's going to happen and when it's going to happen. Here's a kid that, two years in a row lost everything. So we're fortunate to be out here. And you got to think that is a blessing. And I try to tell them every day, you put your feet on the floor. You should be excited about getting out to school and going about your school day and getting on that field and practicing and trying to be better, great at everything that you do, because you just don't know when it's going to end. And, you know, we have something that he doesn't have. You know, we have the ability to play football still and to look over and watch him on the sideline or on the bench during practice, or he's just hobbling around on his crutches watching drills. You know, you look at that and say, man, I know he wishes he was in my shoes, and no matter how hot it is or how tired I am, I got to do it because he can't and he wants to, and I should be realize how fortunate I am and just push harder. And I think our kids are doing that.
Well, I'm glad we have the opportunity to give Connor a special night, and looking forward. I hope everybody will come out, get tickets again. It's the Rudin Report 3rd Annual Awards Night at the guest house at Sacred Heart University on October 27th. I'm going to defer to the coaches here. Sean, I haven't forgotten about you, and it's a bye week coming up this week, and I know some coaches hate the bye week. I was at New Canaan yesterday, and they have injuries, and Lou Marinelli said, yeah, he hates the bye week, but it's coming up at a good time to rest. Sean, I'll let you take over, and you and Joe just talk about the bye week, because that's something I can't talk about from the inside.
I think it changes from season to season, to tell you the truth. When I was coaching, we eventually just got used to it. You know, if you're 4-0, no, you want to keep playing. But if you're 2-2 and you're a little banged up, no, we can use a week off just to freshen up again, get back on track and things like that. That's how I always, you know, thought about it. If you're on a good streak, no, let's keep playing. But if you're banged up a little bit, yeah, a week off does not hurt. That's how I always felt about it.
Joe, what are your thoughts on the bye week?
I never liked the bye week. When it first came out, I remember our bye week was week one, and we didn't play till we had a bye week week one, and then we didn't have a game for week two because it was a 9-game schedule. So we never played till week three that year, and it was kind of crazy. I'm not a fan of the bye week. However, I think this year I am, because, like, you know, you talk about being banged up. We can use some time to heal, especially, we have Darian coming up, so we can use some time to hopefully get some guys healed up a little bit. And this year's a little bit different as well, just because of the summer. The rules changed, and you could go 2 days a week for 2 hours, and it just seemed like a long, grinding summer rather than have a 10-day of spring and get what you need to get done and move on for the, you know, what you were prepared to do. It was a little bit different. It felt like we not had a rest. So that might help us a little bit too. I don't know how other people feel about it, but I felt like the summer was just a long, long grind. And Nikki, we didn't practice every day, every week, 2 days a week, but we did a lot of it just to make sure that we got our time in that we could use. So for us, it's coming at a good time this year to get a little, we got nicked up a little bit Saturday. So hopefully those guys will be ready next week.
Well, Joe, you guys are off to a great start, 4-0, seventh in the poll going into the week. We'll see where the voting takes you, and you're certainly not going to be going down anywhere. We'll see if you come up a little bit, but no surprise seeing an undefeated cadets team, no surprise seeing you in the top 10. And listen, congratulations on the great start. We'll be talking more with Darian coming up in 2 weeks, and I really appreciate you taking the time and the extra time to join us here today.
Yeah, no problem. I appreciate it, you having me on, talk about our team a little bit. So we're excited moving forward, and hopefully we can keep it going.
Okay, well, Joe, best of luck the rest of the way, and again, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Dave. Thanks. John, have a good day.
Right, Joe, take care.
And that was St. Joseph coach Joe Della Vecchia. Thanks again staying overtime with us. We're going to take a break, and when we're back, Sean and I will finish up tying up some loose matters here. You're listening to the Rudin Report live on WICC. We're back here on the Rudin Report Live. I want to thank St. Joseph coach Joe Della Vecchia. Sean, let's, first of all, we touched upon it, but I got mixed feelings on the bye week. I'd like to get rid of it, ideally, too. And the other thing, and this almost gets back to the whole Thanksgiving football situation, but we started so late this year. If you didn't have the bye week, you could have started a week earlier. And if you started normally a week earlier, you could have even gone 2 weeks earlier, and you could end the football season the end of November, which in an ideal world, that's when the football season should end. But again, you got to take into account everything kind of schedule works around Thanksgiving football. And I would not want to give up Thanksgiving football, but I would also like to see a more normal schedule. I don't think should be playing football in an ideal world in December. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, like I said before, I mean, it is crazy because, you know, they say the bye week to get kids fresh for the safety of the kids. But then if your team makes the playoffs, you can, you know, they did a better job separating the games. But a couple of years ago, you'd play a Tuesday, Saturday, and your Thanksgiving Day game. So, like I said, if you're banged up, I like it. But if you're in a role and your team's playing well, you just want to keep playing.
Would you, and because of Thanksgiving football, you know, they're so careful to give the kids proper rest, and then you get 3 games in 10 days. Would you be willing to give up Thanksgiving football to go early September through November?
If I'm in the minority of this, I apologize, but Thanksgiving football is something special, and I think every kid that plays football should have the opportunity to play on Thanksgiving Day.
And I totally get that, which is why I'm sort of conflicted by it. I remember talking about it with Al Gurney, who used to be the athletic director at Stanford, and I was making the argument against Thanksgiving football, and he said, "Dave, we're usually not going to contend for a state championship here. Our Thanksgiving is our Super Bowl, and that is our state championship game." And I know that's probably the case in Norwalk, and it's the case in probably 90% of the communities in Connecticut.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I remember, you know, when they moved the game to Thanksgiving, it was good. I mean, the first or second year we did it, you know, the team that I played on, I think we had 2 wins the whole year. But, like, we still had something to play for, where if we played Fairfield week 10, that game would have been absolutely nothing. You know, like, when Norwalk plays McMahon, there's always 2,000-3,000 people at the game. It doesn't matter what the records are. That's the real homecoming. You know, you see kids with their starter jackets on. You see kids that you've coached 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago. You know, for Norwalk, you know, it's something special. The problem that I have, though, Dave, is it should be mandatory. You play on Thanksgiving unless there's some something that you have to. Like these teams that are playing Wednesday nights, that's a joke. I'm sorry. The teams that are playing Tuesdays, that's a joke. No, play on Thanksgiving. Give the kids something special to play with.
That really brings communities together. You go, just because it's been the biggest game, I've been to Norwalk McMahon games when I was at the Advocate, so I know what it's like, and I've been to others. I'm been spoiled a little bit in that I'm always at the Darien-New Canaan game just because that's ended up being the biggest game, though Staples in Greenwich the last couple of years has certainly rivaled that, but it's not really a community rivalry per se. It's more top of the standings, but you know, Darien-New Canaan, it's crazy in terms of the numbers that are there, and it just really brings the communities together. From a coaching standpoint, I remember Joe referred to when he had the bye the first week in the season. It's kind of like, are you kidding me? So we got to wait an extra week, and we lose what other teams get in terms of healing a little bit. How do you approach it? If you're coaching right now and you know you have a bye this week, What are you doing this week as opposed to if you're getting ready for a game this coming weekend?
Well, for this week, you're not going full pads. Okay, you're not taking kids to the ground. You're not doing live drills. You're kind of just getting brushed up on technique. Well, we would spend a lot of time on special teams this week, like a lot of time on special teams, just to try to get those all situated. Again, not much hitting, like pretty much no hitting at all. And then at later in the week, you know, maybe that Wednesday, Thursday, we would start to go over the game plan with the kids, obviously for the following week. But it's like a lot of individual work. Excuse me, Dave, I'm just getting over a cold. A lot of individual work, a lot of technique work. And then later in the week, Thursday, you know, we start to implement the game plan for the following week.
Okay, let's just bounce around a little bit, and I wanted to talk a little bit about Ludlow, but we'll save that for next week. I'm hoping Mitch is going to join us. Darien is one of the other teams that's in the top 10, and you've got your Norwalk Ties, and we're looking at the game yesterday, and Norwalk scores with 4 minutes and 58 seconds to go in the third quarter. And it's 21-14, and suddenly you're saying, are we on an upset watch here? And then Thomas Hall of the Blue Wave takes the ensuing kickoff and goes 95 yards for score. And Darien just erupts and scores three more touchdowns from there. And suddenly a 21-14 game becomes a 49-14 Darien romp. You know what? You're close, obviously, with Norwalk. So what did you see there?
Yeah, Dave, I saw the same thing you saw. You know, as soon as they returned the kickoff, I'm sorry, Norwalk had all the momentum.
You're allowed to say we.
Yeah, we scored, make it 21-14. And Dave, talking to the kids this week, you know, sometimes you talk, they're like, yeah, coach, we got to, you know, we're going to, our kids were confident this week. Like, when I talked to them, like, coach, we got them. Like, we got this. And it wasn't a fake we got this. They firmly believed that they could beat Darien. And then when we scored the touchdown to go 21-14, I'm like, all right, here we go. Let's put them in an uncomfortable situation. And then they returned to kickoff, and you literally just saw all the wind deflated. You just saw it all go out the window, which led to the, you know, a pretty bad fourth quarter on our part. But give Norwalk credit. They fought them hard for about three and a half quarters.
And one of the things that stood out to me, Darien scored seven touchdowns and six different players scored. They had a kickoff return for a score and an interception return. So sort of showed the versatility there. And, you know, it's the two FCAC weeks have been kind of disappointing because they've been mismatches. But after we come off the bye, we're going to really get into all the top teams playing each other. And you just look at the two big games coming off the bye. St. Joe's has Darien, and that obviously you got two top 10 teams. That's going to really be an interesting game. And then New Canaan and Staples haven't played in years, and they're both defending state champions, and they're going to be meeting. So we're going to have a lot to talk about next week, looking ahead, and in 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's going to, you know, Coach Joe said the bye week's going to feel like forever. This week's going to feel like forever for those four schools, you know, because they know it's coming, and that's what everybody's going to be talking in their communities, in their schools. Everybody's going to be talking about that, their next game for the next 2 weeks. And like, just get here already.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I'm looking forward to big. We haven't really had big FCAC games with two top FCAC teams, so we're just about out of time. Anything else that stood out to you?
No. Hey, listen, happy I'm not a Jets fan right now. I can tell you that.
What's the score now? It was 17-0 before we went on.
That's the last I saw.
Okay, well, it could be worse. We could be Giant fans, and we are. I'm a Giant fan, so I don't know. I'm at the point I just hope we're competitive. Sean, the teams have a bye week next week, but we don't. So you have a good week, and we'll get back to this.
Sounds good, Dave. You do the same.
All right, and that's this week's episode of the Rudin Report Live. Again, I want to thank Sean, and I want to thank St. Joseph coach Joe Della Vecchia. Have a good week, everybody, and we'll do this again next Sunday.